it's incredibly important that people resist what is being done in their name, resist and actually try and change the world.
And I think that kind of physical obstruction of BNP activity is very important.
He's been in the whole of the front of the main screened off, two lock-ons right in the middle of the main road.
Welcome to another super duper action packed edition of your Rise Up Radio, chock full of local news, tunes and interviews.
Alright!
Hey,
I'm Jack Johnson.
And I'm John Jackson.
And another month of the show. Still here.
Yeah,
it's going really well. We're into April now. It's our third show. And we've got loads coming up today, haven't we, Genevieve?
Got a lot of info this month about the up-and-coming week of action for autonomous spaces and what might just be going off in Nottingham. We'll be talking to Dan, who's just returned from the Antarctic on what seems to be a pretty hectic whale-saving mission. And we've been talking to someone from Nottingham's Defy ID group on what's happening locally with regards to proposed IDs. So all that and a whole lot more. And of course, some cracking good homegrown music.
Indeed. So let's kick off then right away with our first track, and that's from Idiot Joy and it's Reverend Jim Bishop.
Reverend Jim Bishop, and I'm here to show you how. I'm the Right Reverend Jim Bishop, and you and I today, we're gonna make the deal. Some copper or some silver into the bag going around the road, it'll be much appreciated. To the left, to the back, to the right and then forward. God's on your left, and the devil's behind you. Who do you turn to? Who is the man who's gonna give you that advice? It's I. Stand up and you feel your soul. You feel your soul. Open it up, open it up. Sing hallelujah. Sing hallelujah. Sing hallelujah. Sing hallelujah.
Sing hallelujah, sing hallelujah, sing hallelujah, sing hallelujah. you all that much sooner.
All right. That was Idiot Joy. If you want to check out more on the bands that we're playing on our show, then I suggest you go to our website, which is riseupradio.wordpress.com, and from there we'll link to the websites of the artists that we play. So next up then, an interview with a guy called Darren, who's involved in some squatting activity in the area.
Right, I'm joined now by a man called Darren, who's going to tell us a bit about squatting. Hi, Darren.
Hi, Jack.
So can you tell us a bit about what squatting is, what it's all about, and why it's important to you?
Okay. Squatting is using or occupying a building without the owner's permission. You know, obviously you won't pay rent, and sometimes people do this for years and years. If you're not rich, it's a good option. And I feel it's important because, to me, shelter's a basic need for humans and all animals. And our access to this is determined by people with the money and the people who own the buildings. And like many people, I wasn't born rich. I don't understand why rich people should allow buildings to rot away and just stand there empty. And people like me have to pay rent, you know, to some rich guy who's probably got a house somewhere else that might well be empty. Seems crazy.
What has been happening in Nottingham on the squatting front over the last few years? Can you tell us anything about that?
Well, Nottingham's got quite an interesting short-term history. I'm not really old enough to know, you know, further back than 10 years, but there's been quite a few squats over the last few years, and the most successful ones have been in council-owned properties. For some reason, you know, they've got a lot of properties empty in Nottingham, and they can't keep tabs on them all. So, you know, there's one squat that was a community centre for a couple of years. That was a really important part of the community it was in. Unfortunately, that's not in such a good position anymore because it basically ran out of steam. But I feel like for 2 years, there was an amazing thing going on in Radford, in Nottingham. So I hope people remember that and are inspired to try and emulate that sort of community centre squat in the future.
That would be the ASBO that you're talking about.
The ASBO community centre.
Okay. So I understand that groups around Europe have called for some international days of action around squatting and autonomous spaces in April. Why is there a need for such days of action?
Well, I think it was largely called by people who are into sort of public and political squats and social centres. And these type of squats are unpopular with governments and they get a lot of attention from police. You know, governments are trying to crack down on these kind of places because a community centre squat challenges the government's authority because the government should be providing these services, I guess. And all the time, they change the laws to try and make it harder to squat, and they order crackdowns by the police. And quite often people are violently evicted, where the police are actually breaking their own laws to do this. And at some point, I guess a group of people just get so angry seeing this repression going on that they stand up and say, that's enough. And somebody called for these days of action. A lot has been going on in Europe in terms of repression of squatted spaces. And I guess on the 11th and 12th of April this year, a lot of people in a lot of cities around the world are going to stand up and say, that is enough. That's enough repression. We need somewhere to live and we need freedom to express ourselves.
And this is going to be expressed in newly created autonomous spaces or celebrated in existing or both?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope a lot of different things happen.
Okay, so is there something planned for Nottingham? What can we expect there?
Well, there's a group of us. We want to open a space in or near the city centre of Nottingham, and we don't think that's really happened before in Nottingham. We want to make it a really lively place. You know, we're going to have music and films. We want to have a free market where people can bring along old things that they don't use anymore and take away other people's unwanted things. We're going to have workshops where people can learn new skills, like bookbinding, perhaps a bike workshop, a juggling and tricks workshop. We are hoping to have a band playing and cheap or free food and drinks. And we've got lots of things that we're working on. Hopefully, at least if a few of these come together, it'll be really exciting.
Great. So that's the 11th and 12th, is it? Yeah. Of April?
Yeah, Friday the 11th in the evening and all day Saturday, there'll be lots of stuff going on.
Okay, and how can people get involved? I mean, should they just turn up or can people get involved beforehand? How can they sort of add their support?
Okay, well, we're trying to encourage people to come along to our open meetings, which are every Tuesday at 7 o'clock at the Sumac. So there's going to be one on the 1st of April and there's one on the 8th of April. It's the last planning meeting before it happens. And if you just turn up, if you've got any ideas or you just want to help us, then turn up to those. But also, for any information, you can email us at squatnottingham@hotmail.co.uk or call us on 07534 496 679, and you can also get all of this information on Nottingham Indie Media.
Wicked. So last planning meeting 8th of April.
Yeah.
Sumac Centre Forest Fields, was that?
Yeah. At 7 PM. Yeah.
Well, that sounds really exciting, Darren. Thanks for joining us today.
That's all right, Jack.
Okay.
Thanks.
That was I Am Electro by the 3AM Association, but more about them later on. For you guys listening now, we've got a fantastic interview with Dan from Nottingham, who was part of the Sea Shepherd mission to Antarctica.
You've just come back from the Antarctic?
That's right.
From on board the Sea Shepherd ship?
That's right. I've just come back last week, so I've been home 8 days now, I think.
What's it like to be back?
Oh, it's nice. I'm going to have to... It's nice to see all my friends and get somewhere that's a little bit warmer. But I have to go back to work and back to normal life, so it's, you know, I'm going to miss it a little bit.
Could you tell me what the aim was of going out there in terms of the Sea Shepherd mission?
Sea Shepherd's mission to the Antarctic this year was to stop the Japanese whaling fleet from meeting their quota of about 1,000 whales. And enforce the conservation laws that protect the Southern Ocean's Whale Sanctuary. Japan's been doing this research whaling ever since the moratorium on commercial whaling by the International Whaling Commission. Essentially, it's a loophole that's exploited by Japan to allow them to continually kill whales in a sort of on a commercial basis. The fisheries agency have never published anything. Any kind of scientific paper or any information regarding whales that we didn't know already. Everything that they've, all the information they've gathered could easily be gathered with non-lethal methods. They're condemned by the British Antarctic Survey and the American Antarctic Survey, you know, real researchers doing real research in Antarctica. So, you know, the research is really just to try and legitimise the fleet.
So this is the main... Japanese whaling fleet is like the
yeah.
fleet.
Japan also has this fleet, which is the pelagic or ocean going fleet. There is also some coastal whaling vessels that take whales off the coast of Japan, sort of within its 200-mile limit. The fleet also the same fleet with Nishinmaru as the factory ship also have a North Pacific whale hunt, which takes 500 or 600 whales a year as well. So. They basically follow the migrations of the whales from Antarctica to the North Pacific, taking whales at each end. And Nishinmaru very rarely comes back to port. It sort of anchors out in the bay in Yokohama, its home port, and comes in for major repairs only. It's at sea most months of the year.
All the time.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like I say, it's a major operation. Just to put a little bit of perspective on how much money they're making out of this, a fin whale, a large fin whale, is worth just under $1 million in terms of its meat and blubber. Minke whales are worth about $250,000. So it's a major industry in terms of the profits it's making.
So you went out there. Could you tell us a little bit about what's been happening?
Yeah, I mean... This year's campaign was really quite epic. In 86 days, the Steve Irwin covered enough distance to go around the world once. it was a major effort, and because of the large amounts of publicity, Sea Shepherd was able to get enough money together to refill the fuel tanks, which is the major expense, really, carry out some repairs and go down for a third time. The previous crew had left for various reasons. A lot of people had run out of time, had jobs to go back to, families to go home to, and so a whole new crew was brought in for the third leg, which included myself. I wasn't there for the first two legs of the mission. And we went down to the Antarctic coast and harassed the whaling fleet and stopped them physically there in front of our eyes. We saw them not whale for 9 days, and the harassment that we scattered the fleet to the four winds, basically. And whilst the fleet scattered, they're unable to whale. So I don't know exactly how many days we were able to stop them. But, you know, it was a good sort of 10, 11 days of whaling.
And that's only the third leg?
No, it's just the third leg. The middle leg. The first leg was cut short by engine trouble, and the ship had to return to Melbourne for repairs. And I, to be honest, I wasn't following the campaign that closely at that point. The second leg was quite... amazing, really. They again broke up the fleet for 3.5 weeks. It's pretty much sort of the whole time that they were down in Antarctica, they were harassing the whaling fleet. And the third leg, like I say, it was, I don't know, like 11 days or something. So, you know, in total, we stopped them for about 5 weeks.
And it said that they only have been able to meet about half their quota.
Yeah, I can't. The number is different depending on who you ask, but the the fisheries agency, Japanese fisheries agency, said that they fell short of their quota by around 500 whales. So yeah, approximately half. And Japan attributed their failure to catch the quota on Sea Shepherd. They didn't mention any other reason. So it's, you know, it's a bit of a pat on the back for us. And, you know, we're all very pleased to hear that they only made a half of their quota. It's still too many. One is too many. But, you know, it's a good use of time and a good use of resources to protect 500 whales. So yeah, it's a good campaign all in all.
The Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, as it's known, they do a lot of other work as well, not That's just right. on the whaling issue. Could That's you explain right, yeah. a bit about that?
Yeah, Sea Shepherd's got three ships and numerous small vessels that patrol various areas. The Farley Moa, the flagship, is actually at the moment on its way up to Canada to protect the baby harp seals that the Canadian government is culling. They're culling about a third of the population, which is insane, being as the population is at less than 10% than it was sort of 30 years ago. So it's, you know, they're really trying to push the harp seals into extinction there. Sea Shepherd's got quite a long history with the harp seal. It was actually the first Sea Shepherd campaign back in 77, I think, you know, where they confronted the seal clubbers. Everyone's seen pictures of baby seals being clubbed. That's going on in a couple of weeks' time off the coast of Newfoundland. So, yeah, Sea Shepherd's on the way there to do that now. That's the current campaign. That's the Farley Mowat. It's also been involved with drift netting and long lining.
So the Sea Shepherd really focused on protecting wildlife in all different forms?
Yeah. Sea Shepherd is basically a direct action conservation group that protects the marine environment. And has opinions on other things too, but doesn't really take action on anything that isn't related to the sea and marine environment. Our third ship, the Serenian, is on a long-term lease to the Galapagos National Park and actually has an Ecuadorian government law enforcement license. And that goes around protecting the no-fishing zone around the Galapagos Islands, which are very ecologically important place in the world. And it arrests shark finning boats, it arrests longliners, and has been really effective out there. It's really been a great help for the park rangers.
If people want to get involved, support Sea Shepherd's work, what are some of the things they could do?
Sea Shepherd's very international. There's support groups in various countries. If you were to go to seashepherd.org, go to the website and find out, you know, where the nearest group is. In the UK, we've got quite a good group of supporters who are involved in sort of doing demonstrations. Like, for example, we had a demonstration at the Japanese embassy whilst I was in the Southern Oceans. There were people here in the UK at the embassy, and they sort of lowered the flag to half mast and caused a bit of a stunt there. But the main thing really is raising funds and getting donations of money and equipment for the ships, because most of our activities are out there at sea. So, you know, you can get involved in the UK just by emailing uk@seashepherd.org. And there's so many different jobs to do. I mean, from ringing up companies and trying to get them to give us money and equipment to sort of helping crew a table at various events up and down the country. You know, there's lots of different ways of getting involved.
Have you got anything else to say to people who might be listening to this?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, we've got to remember that whilst you're at home on land, far away from the sea, that the Earth is two-thirds water, and that most life on Earth does live in the water, and that that's easily forgotten whilst you live in somewhere like Nottingham, about as far away from the sea as you can get. So really, you know, we have so many ecological problems on land, and they're all incredibly important. But what's often forgotten is the damage to the ecosystems and the species and wildlife that live in the sea, because they're unseen. You know, they're below beneath the waves. No one knows much about what's going on with them. And really, we need to remember that and make a bit more of an effort for our ocean dwelling friends. You know, because at the end of the day, you go to any supermarket, the shelves are stacked with seafood, the freezers are full of seafood. Millions of tons of fish pulled out of the sea on a daily basis, and the world's fisheries are in collapse, and we really are on the brink of having a very sterile ocean, and the consequences of that for our planet are quite far reaching. And I for one, I don't want to live in a planet that's got a dead ocean. And it's not just about whales, it's about plankton, it's about sardines, cod, tuna, dolphins, you know, all the different sea life. And so, you know, so protecting the oceans is as important as protecting the forests and protecting the meadows and all the rest of it that people take a lot of time in protecting. So, you know, folks should remember that and put a bit of effort in for the sea.
So that was an edited version of the interview we did with Dan, who returned from the Sea Shepherd mission. If you want to listen to the full interview, which is about twice the length, you can go to our website, which is riseupradio.wordpress.com, where you can download the full version.
See you.
So that was Sophie's Song by the 3AM Association, a Nottingham-based electronic collective who've been going since 2006, made up of producers, musicians and vocalists from around the UK, as well as Nottingham. They're hoping to take their full live lineup around the UK and in Nottingham too over summer 2008, with other acts and DJs as well, all under the 3AM banner. They all promote original electronic sounds on Nottingham's live music scene. So now we're going to have a quick chat about what's been going on with the libraries recently in Nottingham. Is that right, John?
Yeah, it is. Basically, well, it kind of came out that the council, as part of their sort of corporate plan, have this thing called the Corporate Uniform Project, which basically means that reception staff in various council offices, you know, should wear, you know, the council colours.
Oh, yes.
But it basically also means that that's kind of extended to the libraries. So the biggest group out of all those people that have to wear these kind of corporate uniforms are the librarians and the library assistants especially.
How do they feel about that then?
Well, they're not very happy about that. They were told about, I think last year they were told, you know, oh, these uniforms aren't coming in for ages, you know, don't worry about it. You know, this won't come through anyway. And then suddenly it actually did come through and they were kind of quite surprised to hear that.
Now, they got in touch with us, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. One woman who we will refer to as Barbara, she's a library assistant. She's been a library assistant for many years, and she decided to speak up about this. What the main issue with council staff speaking about this is that the council has always maintained that people have signed confidentiality agreements. And that means that if you speak out about an internal policy within the council, you're breaking that confidentiality agreement, which basically means that people fear for their jobs. And not without reason. Sarah Roy, who last year spoke out about some of the developments within the benefits department, she was fired over the fact that she spoke out to the press about the changes, who were very controversial. And she was fired from her job for that. So, yeah, reason to be careful.
But Barbara spoke to Nottingham Indie Media, did she not?
Yeah, she did. Barbara came, we did an interview with her, it was transcribed. And there is a feature article on Notts in the Media, which explains all about that. And lots of people have been commenting on it. Yeah, it sparked a lot of interest.
Yeah, there's been quite a lot of reaction to that story, and also calling to question whether or not this confidentiality agreement does actually exist. So since we published that feature, there has been a lot of comment on it, and we've also received an update regarding the union activity, which was sort of a little bit slow to start with. But since we've carried the story, union have consulted with their members and are now unanimously opposing uniforms for library staff. This has been apparently supported by grassroots surveys conducted by the staff. Unison are now awaiting a response from management and have informed management that if the proposals are turned down, there will be an official ballot with members regarding a refusal to wear a uniform. Apparently some staff are a bit bemused about the suggestion that maybe they can wear aprons or over jackets instead, but we're waiting to see what's going to happen with that. So whilst that was all going down behind the scenes, I went out and hit the mean streets of Nottingham to find out what people think about the libraries and about the uniforms issue.
Hi, excuse me. I'm from Rise Up Radio. I'm asking people what they think about the libraries. What do you think?
I think they're wonderful. But then I've come from a place that had no libraries. I think they're good. I think they're great.
Nottingham's libraries, are they good?
I think so. But I think they are good. And I think they have super people working for them.
What do you think about the fact that library workers are going to be made to wear uniforms in Nottingham?
I don't know about that. Maybe it's a good idea. What do they feel about it? You know, I think at least you approach somebody who is working there and you don't go up to someone who isn't. So from that point of view, certainly if I was working in the library, I might welcome a uniform. Why should I spoil my good clothes?
Do you use the library?
Quite regularly.
What kind of things do you use it for?
Study, get some books for college art and internet.
Do you like it?
Yeah, it's a good facility.
Anything wrong with it?
Not at all. Not really, no.
What do you think about the staff there? Are they helpful?
Yeah, very helpful. Very polite, pleasant overall, yeah.
I really like it, you know. It, like, helps with my studies and things, so it's really helpful.
What kind of things do you use in the library?
I mainly use computers, you know, for, like, studying. But I also, like, read all the books and things.
Do you find that the people that work in libraries, that they're helpful?
Yeah, they're really nice and helpful and help when you need it, and they're nice, you know.
Do you like the fact that they wear their own clothes?
I like it when they wear their own clothes because that makes them comfortable and that makes you comfortable talking to them. So, because if they was in a uniform, I think it'd be a bit intimidating for, like, small kids and stuff.
I go on the internet. I go on every day. Because it's free, because I'm unemployed. I can find a lot of stuff on there that I not normally know about. Anything I want to look up, I just need to type it in and it finds it for me.
Do you like the fact that they wear their own clothes in the libraries, or do you rather they...
No, no. I'd rather they wear their own clothes. Because it's like me and you. I think that is a bad mistake, because it's going to put people off thinking that they're higher than them, and to cut a long story short, they won't get approached as much as they would if it was just like me and you now.
So you think libraries are good?
Yeah, I think libraries are good, definitely. Brilliant. Loads of resources, loads of entertainment, loads of stuff to do, and it keeps you in touch with the community.
Would you say the people that work in libraries, do you think they're a part of what's good about it?
Yeah, they're definitely really helpful, really supportive, and definitely really, really friendly.
Did you know they're going to be made to wear uniforms very soon?
Really? I think that's a good idea, because it would help us to see who was in charge and who was there to help us, because it's not always easy to tell, you know, who actually works here and who doesn't. So that's a good thing.
Do you like the library?
Yes, I like it when I come to it.
Do you think if staff were made to wear uniforms, do you think that would be a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, no, we like to be informal, don't we?
You prefer ordinary?
Yes, informality, perhaps with a badge on to show you who they are. Because I was a bit confused when a young woman came up to me and then she'd got the badge on, so I realised, yeah.
Are you coming here to use the internet and that lot and get away from out here and everything, so I've got something to do to stay here during the day? Keeps me out of trouble.
What do you think about the staff wearing uniforms?
That's stupid. What's the point? At the end of the day, yeah, they're coming here doing a job. Fair enough. If you're working somewhere like that, fair enough. But this is meant to be a comfortable, relaxed zone. You're not meant to walk around here in a uniform. It's not school. It's not McDonald's, I know, is it? I don't see the point. They should be able to wear what they want.
From Mute Axe, Nottingham artist, played a couple of live sets at both the climate camps, and he says he's now doing a bit of studio work with the intention of doing some more live sets over the coming summer. For more details, you can see under on our links page on our website, there's a section artists and all the stuff we play, all the websites are put on there. And just to tell you again, our website is riseupradio.wordpress.com.
Okay then, next we have an audio piece made during the mass blockade at the Atomic Weapons Establishment at Aldermaston in Berkshire. 5,000 people took part in this huge blockade and we went along to find out why nuclear weapons are still an issue today.
Today we're going to Aldermaston, the nuclear weapons base near Reading, part of the CND 50th anniversary, to protest the existence of nuclear weapons.
Now we're in a coach full of people from Nottingham and Leicester.
We're in a coach full of people from Nottingham and Leicester, and there'll be several other, lots of other people going. Each area is going to protest one gate, so that the idea is that each gate will have a presence from different areas of the country, and then at 2 o'clock the plan is to make a human chain surrounding the whole of the base, which has a perimeter of about 4.5 miles, and there'll be a human chain completely surrounding the base as part of the protest.
Hiya.
Hiya.
Could you tell us where we are and what we're doing here?
At the moment we're in Aldermaston at the Atomic Weapons Establishment, where the UK develop new nuclear weapons and keep the ones that we already have updated. At this very second we're at Boiler House Gate, which is where a lot of the Eastern Region and others from across the country have come to. There's hundreds of people at each gate.
Good turnout.
It's a good turnout, yeah. There's we knew that there was going to be a minimum of 3,000 people coming on coaches, but it seems like there's just people walking from all of the stations. There's loads of people bringing cars as well. There's cyclists, and yeah, people are still arriving.
That's great. Why is it important for people to care about nuclear weapons? I mean, some people might, you know,
I guess a lot of people focus on climate change and world economics is like more pressing issues. Why do you think it's actually important now?
The ultimate bullying tactic that we have in the world is nuclear weapons. If you look at the countries that are causing the most climate change and all of the crimes that are being committed, they have the nuclear weapons. So they're the ultimate bullying tactic. If we're going in and taking oil from countries and saying that they're developing nuclear weapons and that's why we've got to go in there and bomb them, what are they talking about? They're talking about nuclear weapons. All the issues are extremely connected. It's important that we campaign on everything, but nuclear weapons are the ultimate bullying tactic. They need to be taken away so that we can start communication properly across the world.
Why are you here? Why have you come today?
Because I want to call government to account about the proliferation of nuclear weapons.
To protest against the hypocrisy that sees our government investing more money in new nuclear weapon systems while trying to prevent proliferation around the rest of the world, and that hypocrisy has to end.
There's been a recent sort of upsurge in a lot of protests around climate change and, you know, a lot of other pressing issues, global economy. Like, you know, a lot of people might argue that that is, you know, maybe more important. But why do you think it is, like, relevant now as well as in the 80s to really make a point about nuclear weapons?
I think there's a very clear issue about security that is linked to climate change in terms of energy security. And I think if we're going to be living in a more cooperative and safe world, then we have to get rid of these abominations, our nuclear weapons.
And very basically, £5 billion could do a lot to prevent climate change. So let's stop spending it on the weapon systems just behind us and spend it on some measures to sort out those other big pressing issues.
Because I guess nuclear weapons are kind of a guarantee for us to pull our might around the world as kind of the rich West.
In fact, they make us less safe. They create an atmosphere where weapons are the solution, where diplomacy is undervalued because there's this backup of weapon systems. If we really believe that we can use diplomacy to bring peace, then we don't need these systems. And it leaves us continually creating new sources of instability because we don't have to prevent creating them because we feel we're safe while the rest of the world isn't, and we've got to change that.
We're walking around the base, sort of spreading ourselves out around all the Mustang. What's your name and where have you come from today?
I'm Penny and I'm from Nottingham Uni.
Why have you decided to come today?
I just felt that it was something really important to come along to, especially marking 50 years of the old Marston protest. I think it's really important to sort of not forget the campaign that happened 50 years ago and things, you know, the issue's still just as current today.
Yeah, obviously it's a bit of a symbolic thing today,
yeah,
being Easter Monday. There are, of course, more direct approaches to protesting. Have you been involved in any of those?
Yeah, I've been involved in protesting up at Faslane where they have the nuclear submarines. So that was slightly more sort of direct action based, but yeah, I feel today is more of a sort of symbolic thing that anyone can sort of get involved in, lots of people from different backgrounds, and it's just a really nice event.
So why do you think actually nuclear weapons is an issue still today? And
I think nuclear weapons are a really big sort of global problem in that it's just another sort of form of Western dominance, really. I mean, it's the kind of hypocrisy that we can have nuclear weapons and other countries can't. And I feel very strongly about climate change and other issues as well. But I feel that this is something that, you know, we're spending so much money on and it's just still just as important really today.
Yeah. You're a student, I understand.
Yeah.
Is there anything people can get involved with at Nottingham University?
Yeah, definitely. There's quite a few groups at Nottingham Uni. Nottingham Students Peace Movement, we're fairly active, and there's also a Green Party and Amnesty International, so there's lots to get involved in.
After a full tour around the base, and they say there is a fair spread of people the entire way around the perimeter of the base. So if you want to give yourself a cheer for that, I'm going to go and close the gates of the base with some nuclear tape. And the base will be closed for a month's time. Woo!
Hi, I'm Stacey and I've come from Loughborough, although I've travelled from Bedford today.
Why have you come today?
I've come because I think it's important that we educate people about what's going on in our back garden that a lot of people aren't really aware of at the moment. And the nuclear issue, I think, is one of the biggest problems aside climate change, about which what we're facing at the moment. So
yeah, we're standing here in a bit of hail.
Yeah,
it seems to be getting worse. A lot of people have been very determined to come here. I mean, there's a big turnout, bigger than normally, I think, around Aldermaston.
Yeah, I think it's been a really impressive turnout, and there's a really great atmosphere here. Everyone's pulling together loads, and there's a really nice mixture of people, all ages, races, religions. So I think it's really great that everyone's come together here today.
You mentioned you were from Loughborough.
Uh-huh.
Anything going on there?
We have a Loughborough Students, People and Planet and Amnesty International group, and we do a lot of campaigning in the Loughborough area. We also try and make links with Nottingham and Leicester with their groups. There are things going on, and you can check us out on our website.
I'm sure there's some people listening who might sort of are interested in getting involved, but might have been a bit reluctant to do so, or haven't quite got active yet. What would you, if you got something brief to say to them, what would you say to them?
I think it's really important that people, I mean, I'm talking from someone my age, you know, in their 20s, get involved in the issues that are out there. I think there's a lot of apathy around at the moment. I think it's very easy to get swept away with the materialistic capitalist world that we're living in at the moment, and there are a lot of people out there, when you start to search, that do care about the issues, that do care about human rights, the future of the planet. So I'd say seek those people out and get active, because you can make a difference.
Just not to mend the window pane, and they're gonna need this house no longer. He's a getting ready to meet the same.
And now for a non-commercial break.
So could you tell me what the AT Co-op is about?
The AT Co-op is about bringing together the vast amount of equipment and experience and spaces that various campaigning groups and grassroots movements throughout Britain have. At the moment, we've got an awful lot of equipment and knowledge dispersed and not really networked or brought together. Through the AT Co-op, we plan to do that, identify gaps where we need to buy stuff, and then become quite self-sufficient. Not just in skills, but certainly in putting on outdoor events such as Climate Camp, Earth First Gathering, Animal Rights Gatherings. You know, we want to work within the grassroots movement. Initially, we're going to network people with equipment and people putting on events. However, once we have a better idea of what's needed and we've start raising a few funds, then we will look at actually buying material to fill in the gap, so that we don't have to rely so much on commercial ventures which are bleeding us dry. For example, back of envelope calculations say that in the last 4 years, we probably wasted, through hiring and wastage of not being able to look after material, in the region of £100,000. That's a lot of money that could be spent an awful lot better. Putting on large-scale events is very draining, it's very tiring, especially some of the large-scale events projects that the movements have been putting on recently, such as Climate Camp. By adopting a much more professional attitude in terms of the materials we need, we'll lift an awful lot of that burden away from people, meaning that people can focus more on campaigning, focus the money more on outreach. It brings together an awful lot of knowledge, experience and need.
What are you asking from people at the moment, how they can help out with this?
At the moment, we want to know what they have and what they're willing to give. Not so much giving outright to us, although we'll accept that, but also what materials they would like to see being better used. You know, do you have a marquee in your backyard? Do you have a vehicle that's not being used very much? And you would like to see activist groups, campaign groups, local groups being able to use that stuff. We're offering to be the middle people in that. You know, we will ensure that material is professionally looked after, maintained, and in return you know that it's going to a good use.
So where can people actually look? Is there a website?
We've got a website. It's www.atgroup.org.uk, or they can ring us directly on 0845 217 8997.
Excellent stuff.
Right, so that was a trailer about the new activist TAC co-op, which is just getting going. It sounds like a really good idea to me. Let's value and make use of our resources and network what we've got. If you're interested, have a look at their website, atcoop.org.uk. have a look. If you've got any resources that you think might be made use of for gatherings and the movement in general, then you could get in touch with them. Likewise, if you can give time and skills or energy, get in touch with them also. So now we're going to listen to an interview with a chap who's involved with Defy ID Group in Nottingham.
Defy ID was set up in response to the plans of the British government to introduce an ID scheme, an ID card scheme, and the general levels of surveillance associated with that. That process of the British government setting up this scheme has become a very long-winded one, and it's weaving its path in a very complicated way, but it looks like it's still coming towards us. Defy ID is a non-hierarchical response to this imminent threat. So what we've been involved in doing is putting together a lot of information for people about the plans of the government to increase surveillance of us and make that information available. That information is available in the form of bulletins that we produce regularly on our website and that we also hand out in paper form. Now, what we're just started doing here today is also running workshops for maintaining your anonymity in this security culture. And this particular workshop today was anonymity advice for activists. So if you're involved in political campaigning, obviously there's a lot of people that want to gain information about you, and we were trying to give a brief summary of the kind of strategies that you might use to protect your private data. It was our first outing for this workshop, and it was quite exciting, very nerve-wracking, and will be lots of improvements to be made, but generally I think we've set the ball rolling, so many more of them to come.
So could you tell me a little bit, because obviously there is a more mainstream No to ID campaign going on.
Yeah.
Could you tell me a little bit about what the difference is between No to ID and Defy ID?
No to ID is a centralised campaign, which means that it has, I think it has an office somewhere, and it has employees, and there's a lot of people find it difficult to work in these approaches because you may have opinions that it's hard to express within the campaign. The things that started making it reason why a lot of people were not too keen on joining up with No to ID was some of the materials that they were producing in terms of propaganda were very hard for people to distribute because they had suggestions they weren't very happy with. So like one of them was a lot of the materials that No to ID produced very early on would say it would be much better if the government spent the money on policing instead of ID cards. And that's not necessarily something that the kind of people that have got involved in Defy ID think is a very good idea. So we'd obviously rather that the money wasn't spent or it was spent on something a bit more social aim than policing. But that's because sort of the backgrounds of where some of us come from politically. Mm. In general, the main feature of Defy ID is it's a grassroots and it's a decentralised campaign. So we have meetings here in Nottingham, and the people at those meetings will often change from month to month, week to week, and there's nobody in charge and nobody has any fixed roles, yet we're still, for a very small number of people, getting a lot of work done.
Yeah.
I think it's actually proving quite successful.
So people want to get involved, people want to know, find out more about it, where they're going to go?
They go to our website, which is www.defy-id, so that's defy-id.org.uk will take you to the Defy ID national website. You should be able to find Nottingham Defy ID from there. Google is the easiest way to find us.
Oh, hold on, before you go on to Google. There's actually on the Rise Up Radio website, yeah, we'll have a link to the Nottingham Defy ID group.
Brilliant.
So you can find it from there as well.
So, Defy ID, we're not all experts. I'm not very good at internet-related stuff, so I'm afraid that I don't protect my information as well as I could do.
But it is about getting together and actually acknowledging these issues exist.
Yeah.
And working towards ways of improving our, yeah, security and stuff like that, I guess.
Yeah, different people are obviously experts in different things, and computer security is a really important thing, and there's lots of information out there about how you can get that and, I think, achieve that.
All right, so, well, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Cool. Right, so that was someone from the Nottingham Defy ID group. Next up is an interview we did with someone just after the legal advice Skillshare, the SUMEC. And just to tell you a little bit about the SUMEC Skillshare, we've probably gone off about it in previous shows. The Skillshare has been happening at the Sumac every Saturday, and it's all about sharing practical skills, mainly to do with trying sort of relying more about the stuff we know, the stuff your friends know, you know, getting clued up on all sort of issues, and sort of teaching ourselves in many ways. The Sumac Skillshare stopped over April, and there'll be a new program coming out, I think, sort of during May. So keep your eyes open for that. Yeah, and we'll give you this.
Could you tell me a little bit what went on today with the Sumac Skillshare?
Yes, today we had a Skillshare for legal advice for activists, which was basically giving information to people who were considering taking action against social change, climate change, or such issues where there was the possibility of being arrested for taking that action. And the purpose of the Skillshare really was to give advice and information to people so that they were empowered to take action and not scared about the possibilities of confrontation or engagement with the police or even arrest. Part of the Skillshare was a role play, which I guess took a couple of hours, where as best we could in the workshop we set up a scenario. In this case it was a blockade and obstruction of the highway scenario, and took the people who'd come along to the Skillshare through the whole process, from being part of the action and part of the protest, to being arrested, to what that was like, to being taken to the police van, to then going to the police station, and the whole police arrest detention scenario, making it as real as we possibly could. Before we did the Skillshare, we spent a little bit of time just going through the basic information around the police powers to arrest, police powers to require information about your name, your address, what powers the police had in connection with stop and search. We feel that it was important, or those of us who were part of the Skillshare, was it was important not to give lots of legal information about the law, but to just give enough so that people felt able to really question what was happening to them, because
it is important to be informed, because just to know what your rights are when you're in a situation to be able to refer to that.
It is important, well, for two reasons, really, I think. One is, if you know before you get into a situation, which can be quite a stressful situation, and particularly for people who've been involved then kind of confrontation with the police for the first time, you can get quite, it can be quite anxious making. So if you've actually armed yourself with information, then it makes it less scary. And secondly, really, to challenge what the police are doing. Unfortunately, we now have the situation where the police have quite a lot of police powers, under which they can arrest you, and under which they can stop and search you. For example, you know, I guess the one we all know now is the misuse, in my view, of the Terrorism Act, whereby the police will stop, search and question people when they actually don't have the legal power to do this. And so the Skillshare was to give empowering information so people were aware of what their rights were, and they could therefore challenge the police, because quite often what happens is the police actually don't know what powers they have. So once challenged and armed with the information, you can actually be quite empowered, and really situations can be avoided. Police will not arrest you if they know that you are somebody who knows the basis on which they can arrest you.
You know what you're about.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's about just simply being, not being arsy about it, just being assertive and saying to the police officer, no officer, you cannot ask for my name and address in these circumstances. No officer, I think that arrest is unlawful.
Yeah. Obviously, there's people who haven't been able to make it to the Skillshare. Is there any way they can access the information later on?
Yes, as part of... I mean, obviously, the workshop was the workshop, and, you know, I guess we'd run it again if people wanted to. In terms of the information, a number of handouts were prepared for the Skillshare, and we proposed to put those up on the website, and... you know, if there are any other bits of information that people would like, they can always contact the people organising the Skillshare. And I know those of us who are involved in today's legal activist workshop would be happy to put more information up or even run another workshop. But yes, all of that information will be up on the website.
Yeah, and the website is at eastsideclimateaction.org.uk. All right, thanks for that.
Thank you.
Right, well, in fact... The way people get access to a solicitor when in police custody has recently changed on the 14th of January 2008, and that's for England and Wales. If you were to be arrested, instead of the police contacting the solicitors directly, they will now ask a call centre to contact your solicitor. If you think that you or others may be arrested, then contact your solicitors in advance and ask whether they can deal with the new system. Also, if the police are not going to interview you, then you will not get to see a solicitor. Instead of that, you can speak to a legal advisor on the end of a phone. For more legal information for activists, check out the website for the Activists Legal Project, which is www.activistslegalproject.org.uk.
All important stuff.
So, we're coming towards the end of our show now for this month. It's been pretty hectic, but we've enjoyed ourselves. I think next month we're going to bring you stuff on the Fossil Fools Day actions that are happening around the country. We'll also have stuff from Nottingham Transition City, and no doubt loads of other stuff. So I think we're going to leave you with the final track, which is by a man called Matt Hinton, and he's from the Snenton Music Teaching Project called Send. So... I think that's about it. Don't get into trouble now, folks, and we'll say goodbye.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Baby. pretend, no one thinks, no one wins tonight. I'm getting up to the end. I'm getting up to the end. No one moves, no one goes, no one thinks, no one looks now.
For a little secret, all you diehards out there who've been listening to the very last bit of the show, if you go to riseupradio.wordpress.com, which is our website, you'll find that we've got loads of special features there. We've got an extra show which we did this month as well, called the Badly Hard Show. That's only really if you're into really, really, really loud music. Go to the website, comment, you know, let us know what you think of the show. We'd really appreciate that. Right, till next month.